Hey guys, another episode during the quarantine of Talk About That. I'm John.
Hey, I'm Johnny.
And we're doing this a little differently than usual. We are actually Zooming this meeting and recording over Zencaster.
Zooming a meeting? I don't like the way you...
Zoom and Zencaster? Zowie!
Not sponsors, unfortunately. Man, if you had Zoom stock before this week or last week, wouldn't you be...
Oh,
you're sitting pretty, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we're trying to adhere to the guidelines and have some social distancing. And so you may hear, because it is going over the worldwide interwebs, there are times that you may hear a little bit of zzzz in there. If you do, we apologize for that. We're doing the best we can.
That's what the Zoom means. It means that noise.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Yeah, we're. I may put on a mask from time to time. That's just because that's how vigilant I am.
Johnny this. Really is, man. Yeah.
I'm trying
to put on a mask when he takes a shower.
We're going to flatten this curve. It's the last thing I do. I don't know. But yeah.
It's a crazy time to live in, Johnny. It really is a little, it's different than anything else we've ever experienced.
Yeah, I think so. It'll be interesting. Somebody said how boring people's stories are going to be after this, because we're all kind of like, you don't know what I went through. I had to sit in my house for 12 days. You know, it's like we're so, but I know some people are experiencing like a lot of different things. Like everybody's going through it, but everybody's experiencing it differently. Some people have lost jobs and stuff. So I would never make light of that, but it's just like people's horror stories of it. It's just like, we had to watch Netflix all day.
Yeah.
Potato chips. It was terrible.
Yeah. You know, of course, Laura's job is like, totally been crazy busy because of it. And she works in healthcare, you know,
yeah.
So everything is up in the air. And then my job's been kind of busy too, since because of it and all of the daily videos and calls. I mean, I had a 3-hour tech call, you know, this morning on things. I mean, this is Easter week, you know, in the church
Easter
world.
Week.
So it just affects
that's
everybody
our,
so differently.
Super Bowl, John, in the church world. That's what we say. That's the Super Bowl.
Well, isn't also though the Super Bowl kind of our Super Bowl?
Cause sure.
We watch do those too.
Yeah.
That's right. Back when there was a Super Bowl. Yeah.
I wonder if they say that in football. Guys, this is our Super Bowl this week. We know, coach. Yes, we get it.
We get it. We just did interviews all week about
this. This is like our Easter, you guys. So get ready because.
No, you find those football players. Guys, this is a big deal. This is our Easter. God, that's funny. That is funny. Oh, my God. We just gave somebody an idea out there.
We did.
Great.
I don't know. I'm trying to learn all this tech stuff because I'm going to try to launch a video show this week. We did a simulcast. Or some kind of video cast with my buddy John Branion and Bob Smiley, fellow comics. And it was fun. It was kind of the most normal I've felt since all this happened. You know, we were able to kind of just cut up with each other and be silly. But it is weird because you're in a different room than each other and you're not hearing an audience. We're like running bits and stuff for each other. And it's weird, but it was cool. We had people commenting. So we're doing that again Wednesday. So watch for that on my Facebook page if you follow me. And if you don't follow me, go follow me. And I'll be posting the link to that. So it'll be a live thing where you can, it'll be very interactive. And we actually have a special surprise guest that has confirmed that it's a big deal that's going to sing a song. So.
Oh, wow. You're not supposed to tell everybody I was going to do that. It's a surprise,
no,
Johnny.
It's going to be your Super Bowl, John. Get ready.
This is my Easter.
It's your Easter. It'll be fun though. But we're trying to
learn.
Everybody's learning on the fly, like you say, with the online services, and we're all kind of figuring it out. Which you guys had some glitchiness this past Sunday. It got a little wonky, John. I'm not trying to have a critical spirit about it.
Yeah.
But I switched churches.
Yeah.
Midstream. I literally switched midstream. I was like, you know what? I'm a Calvinist now. And I went on over.
Yeah.
I checked out down the road.
You can't think of a Calvinist church. You're like, I checked out First Calvinist.
Presbyterian. No, there's a thing like you set up multiple laptops and you're kind of like, you're church hopping. You know, you feel good about it.
It really
like,
is.
Let's see who's talking about tithing. All right, keep flipping. You know, you just keep going till you find one that's like, all right, this feels good. This feels right.
We had a Zoom call with our small group last night, and one of them was like, yeah, we've got it opened up on like 5 devices, you know, to help the numbers, you know. Everybody looks like, I said, look, as long as all 5 of those are paying tithe, we're good.
That's
you know?
Great, man. Yeah, I wonder if there's churches out there that are doing that are fudging their numbers in some way.
Man. I do have pastor friends who, and I love them dearly, and I don't say anything. I have pastor friends.
I want you to name names, John.
We don't have conversations that in the first 2 minutes that don't tell me what their latest numbers were.
Yeah.
Whether, in fact, they did it. We had a talk the other day about they were, you know, live streaming or whatever, and they immediately started trying to find out what the numbers are to tell me. And I was like, and I know they're just wanting to celebrate, you know, that's kind of a probably, I don't know. I try to avoid numbers.
That, though, to kind of like, here's my achievement or here's the data to back up what we're doing.
Well, I mean, we're actually more well attended online than we are in person. I told the group last night, I was like, you know, the deal is any given week, I believe an American church, or at least in Mount Juliet or the Nashville area right now, between youth sports and between allergies and between vacations or holidays, any given week, 30% of the people who think of the church at Pleasant Grove as their home are gone for one of those three reasons: sickness, travel, or some other sort of holiday thing.
Yeah.
And so right now, no one can go anywhere. So it was like, I told them, I was like, really, every week is Easter for us right now. Everyone's showing up every week because they're not out doing those other things. So come on, Johnny, every week's Easter. Every week is our Super Bowl. And
right until football comes back. And then, sorry, Jesus.
Sorry about that. Titans are playing again. Yeah.
I got to get there early. Yeah, it's all right. I see you have somebody crawling behind you. You had somebody crawl behind you. Is that your
you don't get this in a normal. That's well. Who else would it be? It's not Laura. It's not my mom. I mean, she's back there crawling on the floor.
I couldn't tell. I thought it was like a back.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. I'm in the bedroom right now.
Yeah,
because it's one of the only spaces I can find. So here's the deal. I did the live opening yesterday with Andrew. Mm-hmm. I was from my house. We did a Zoom call. And you were talking about some of the glitchiness stuff. So before we were all testing it, and I went up into the bonus room, and I realized that somehow I had noticed that two lights were out in the ceiling fan up there. So I go grab a bulb. They're like those Edison bulbs. And I stand up on a stool. Of course, it's wobbly. And you know me, I'm a picture of grace and athleticism.
Sure.
But it wasn't looking as such at the moment. And I stuck the bulb up in there. And Johnny, it sparked. Like big sparks flew out of the ceiling fan down on me, and the whole thing went dark. And so I looked at the bulb, and it turns out it had a different size. It was a different size bulb. Like it was a narrow. I don't know why though that would have done what it did, but I have fried. I completely fried the ceiling fan 15 minutes before church as I'm trying to get the perfect shot set up with some lighting for what I had to do. And so I didn't even tell my wife to after church. I was like, well, and so I went up there and tested it. It's gone. It's gone, man. Ceiling fan's gone.
I'll come over and fix it.
So, well, I mean, I just installed a ceiling fan 2 weeks ago in Sadie's room. So we've already ordered another one. Like it's fried.
And you think for sure it's all the way fried just because of that?
The fan won't even come on now. So like it's not even
tripped.
I went and checked the breaker. No breaker trip. I'm just hoping I didn't do some irreparable damage into the wiring or something up into the ceiling. So, but that couldn't happen, Johnny.
No,
it'll be
houses
fine.
Don't burn down. You'll be
no,
fine.
No, everything's fine.
Be just great.
So I ended up in the spare bedroom where we have Sadie's stuff set up, and it was like just a wall behind me. So right now I'm in the bedroom.
That would have been a fun thing for a live stream. You want to explain that unicorn, John? Aren't we all like unicorns, really?
We're all
so special and rare to God.
Oh my goodness, that's so true. We've fly around. That's a Pegasus. Sorry.
Yeah, you've got your mythology all. Mythology to me has always been my Achilles hip, and
it's good, Johnny. Yeah. It's good. You still got it, man. Don't let this quarantine get you down. You still got it.
You think so? I don't know.
Hey, are y'all canning in laughter for your comedy podcast?
We're not. We're just gonna let it rip and just see what happens. We're not going to go find old episodes of I Love Lucy and grab audio from that, if that's what you mean. Like,
so you're like literally right now looking for LOLs. Like they mean something.
We watch those hearts. We watch those laugh emojis and we live off those. That's our currency now.
If someone is laughing hard, think about this. If they could put the heart or the laughing emoji into the stream, could they really be laughing that hard? Like, I want them to be laughing so hard that they can't find the button.
They can't even get to it. Yeah. Marty, my buddy Marty, did a video for a Zoom call for a company, and it was like 12 people in boxes, and he told them right off the bat, he's like, I'm not going to be able to tell if you're laughing, so I want you to just raise your hand if you're laughing, so that I can just see as I go for the timing purposes. So he would do a joke and there'd be whatever. And then there'd be one guy folding his arms and he'd have to like focus on that guy. He said he did a bunch of crowd work. It was weird.
Wow. Wow.
He just focused on the one guy folding his arms. It was like, all right, what's it going to take, Bob from corporate? You know? And I don't know. But yeah, that'll be a weird new thing because I got asked about doing those too for, I think it was for like a radio group, Christian radio. They're trying to do something for their folks. And a booker called me about that. Hey, would you be willing to do this? And I said, whatever it is. Yes. You know, but I mean, there's no way to know if it'll be any good. It'll just be like, I'm not turning down work right now. So
yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. Audiences are kind of important for comedy, but I mean, there's certain comedy you can do without an audience. And I'm trying to figure that whole thing out, like do some concept videos, like what we do for the, we used to do for the church maybe, or stuff like that. Just try to figure out. But then again, there's no way to get together and record them with a crew and with, you know, other actors. You have to do it all yourself. So
we'll see. we're having some, because we're trying to do some remote, like collaborative things church wise.
Yeah.
We really went down the rabbit hole of music, having people, you know, record multiple tracks, but you really do hit the wall of each person's respective technological either knowledge or their acquisition of equipment.
Yeah.
Like you got to have certain stuff and you really can't get anything fast right now via Amazon and you can't go out and get it. So if you didn't already have an interface and a microphone, like didn't you tell me yesterday, like all the webcams are sold out right now?
Good webcams that I would use now to do my thing. Cause I don't want to use the webcam on my computer, which is what I'm using now. It's just, there's just better quality out there. But yeah, you needed 2 months lead time to go get the stuff that you needed. Cause now it's all gone. I was thinking like podcast equipment's probably gone. It's like a toilet paper, which I found out the toilet paper thing. Did you hear this story? The whole idea that people were hoarding toilet paper is wrong. That's a whole wrong. It's a misconception. The reason toilet paper is out of control and why it's all gone is because we have two different kinds of toilet paper industries in this country. We have commercial use and we have home use. And they're made at totally different mills, evidently. And home use is having such a run because people are stuck at home. Think about how many times you go to the bathroom in another place that's not your home.
Sometimes I get in the car just for that purpose, somewhere else.
You go somewhere else, blow their bathroom up, don't trouble your wife with it. What I'm saying is there is none of that happening now. So all that's being bought is home use. And so it's just the fact that we're not like, you know, people that go to the bathroom at their jobs, there are no jobs, you know, like that. Yeah. You're working from home. So that's what caused the shortage, not people buying like cases at a time. Like I never really saw that. I never really saw people overbuying. And yet there was all this myth. So I don't know. Maybe some of that happened, but I think it's, you know, they're I don't know, this article just kind of tried to, and I know it's, we're everybody talking about toilet paper now, but I'm just saying I wanted to add some clarity. Get off Charmin's back. It's not their fault.
I saw a commercial for Cottonelle where they're like, we're making more. We will stop you. And I was like, dude, like you're lying.
It's like a political ad. We will defeat this. It's morning again in America.
You know, I did have a thought, Johnny. Downstairs in our staff, we talked about so many times. I wrote a book for John Kerry when he came on staff called Letters to the Other John. And it was like all of my youth ministry, whatever, at that point. Right. So, and well, obviously.
The paper thing is, it's like people are going to the other John instead of, I'm just like, okay.
You took away my joke. Anyway, I was like, we have 2,000 copies downstairs and I always want to throw them away.
Yeah.
And Andrew's always like, no, we'll find somewhere to donate them. And nobody wants them because they're completely obsolete. Let's be honest.
Great writing in there, John. I read some of that book. It's great.
There may be great writing, but it's like, it's kind of well before the I don't know. Anywho, I was like, guys, we found a use now for Letters of the John. Everyone take a copy home, rip out a page, man, and we're done.
Yeah.
There you go. I am helping the shortage.
Go to the other John and,
go to the other John.
We took toilet paper so much for granted, don't you think? We didn't know what we had.
It was a simpler time, Johnny, when you could just have all the toilet paper you wanted.
People.
Oh, my goodness. Just to roll around in it on the bed and stuff, just big piles.
Absolutely.
Oh, it was great.
It was currency. Yeah. We'd say how many rolls? And they'd say five, and you'd be like, I'll give you four. You'd talk.
Yeah. Everyone loved to. Negotiation was a big deal in the toilet paper industry trade.
The problems that we're having that are coming from this, it affects so many areas. And some of the problems that we're having, we could never have perceived. Like, who would have thought a virus could cause gun ownership to go up. Like people are freaking out. And here's the indirect cause. They're starting to release people from prisons. Have you heard this?
Uh-huh.
Because they're afraid of prison populations getting infected and just like it being, you know, whatever.
Yep.
They'll all be on ventilators or whatever. So they're like releasing people. So now people are like, there's dangerous criminals out in my neighborhood. So they're all freaking out, gripping their guns tighter. So it's like, are we going to have random break-ins because of Corona? The other one is, I saw this. I knew it was going to happen when they started requiring masks. Hey, Laura. They start requiring masks.
She can't hear you.
Okay. They start requiring masks. And I was like, this is going to be weird. And sure enough, there was a picture in the paper yesterday or on the news. It was a lady who was shoplifting from Target. And as she was leaving, she's wearing her mask, as is public requirement right now. You're supposed to wear a mask, but they can't identify her now.
Oh, wow.
So they're like,
we just gave everybody bank robber masks.
Absolutely. And it's going to be weird if you don't have one. So yeah, if you go into Target, just take what you want. All they can see is your eyes. You know,
I'm really glad you just told all of our listeners how to do that. We have a high criminal population listening. I'm pretty sure.
Right. I'm not encouraging. I'm just saying like, this is the weird unintended consequences of like freaking out about a public health crisis is shoplifting is going to go up and culpability for that shoplifting is going to go down.
Yeah. Wow. You know, and the way my brain works, the other day I was getting out of the car and I was thinking, should I lock my car? Should I not? And I thought, you know, well, and I started thinking about my house. Like, how is my house more secure during this crisis or less? So to your point about buying guns, I thought to myself, you know, I bet all the criminals are home too. And they don't want to get sick and die. So it's odds are they're not going to come into my house. I could be infected, you know, like, dude, that's your weapon right there. We should put signs out like, do not enter coronavirus inside. And, you know, I don't know, I'm just thinking, or you could just lock your doors and set your alarm. So, that's I'm just saying, I thought it through a little bit. You know, how is it working? So
the coronavirus is a weapon. So yeah, like you're right. Are you better off with that than a gun? Who knows?
But an intruder comes in, you're like, hey, stop right there. You know, or I will sneeze. I mean, like, you know, you have like this power, you know, to project.
Hold them at bay with like a booger on the end of your finger. Stand back.
Do not come within 6 feet of me if you know what's good for you.
I guess.
In two weeks. You're going to start having symptoms or whatever. I don't know. It's really bad when you try to actually follow through on the threat. You'll be sneezing and probably okay.
Yeah, you'll probably be fine. It'll probably just be like the worst cold you've ever had, but who knows?
Right.
It'll stop old cat burglars. Like they're just like, maybe it's time to hang it up. You know, I'm too old for this game.
Well, they can just apply for unemployment now. You know what I'm saying? So it's get that small business loan that's forgivable, you know?
I don't know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We obviously, guys, we're not criminologists. I'm not really sure what this is doing.
We're not anyologists.
No, we're not
at all. But it's okay. Yeah. So you didn't put a cool Zoom background up. You just have your random room, and I just have my random storeroom where I keep my merch and stuff.
Johnny,
backgrounds you can add that where it looks like you've got it more together.
This podcast came together really like haphazardly. Like I just ran to the church, and so when I did, I wore a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And everything in my pockets, like I disinfected. I had to I took one key and
disinfected in your pockets. You just poured Purell down there?
No, I took it out as I was leaving the church. I disinfected everything in the parking lot before I went back into my car. So I'm keeping the two spaces, but I had to go get a stand and a few things. It's just such a weird world, you know. So I barely got it all put together here. I got to shoot some video. I know you're doing some video. I got it. My publisher called, you know, and they really are encouraging. And so is my publicist, really encouraging, you know, for me to do some kind of video work for the endorsement right now, because it's such a encouraging kind of funny thing for them. So I'm writing a little bit and trying to get some video stuff together to just start doing a couple.
You've got a tiger by the tail, bro. You've got the book in the crisis about being stuck indoors. I mean, I was a conspiracy theorist. I would say, is it a man-made virus? And was it man-made by a teaching pastor at a church in Mount Juliet, Tennessee?
Has John traveled to China anytime recently? And the answer is, I don't think so.
No.
Unless I'm so sick, I can't remember.
Because he's a teaching pastor. You can't afford to go to Wuhan.
No, I don't have. I did go to Disney and went through China there at the
Epcot or whatever.
Yeah, it was really
Festival
good.
Festival of Nations.
Food, yeah. Oh yeah, it was great. I ate some food, but I don't think any of that would have helped.
No, you didn't have any.
I feel really weird about this, and I actually communicated this to some of the people I'm working with.
Yeah,
I really want to find a way to give the book away for at least a season. I really don't want. By the way, the book is available for less than $5 right now, paperback on Amazon.
That's a value, John. Because so, I mean, they've already discounted. I paid $15 each for the ones that I bought from you to give to my relatives.
And by the way, I didn't even know. What did you pay me with?
I paid you with Venmo or Square Cash or whatever. And then you were like,
still be in my account.
I just thought I gave it to you. You were like, well, what's this even for? And I was like, it's for
I thought it was your Christmas present. Yeah. And then I went and bought you a Christmas present.
Cash for Christmas. That's so dumb.
I didn't think we did that anymore. And then I already had you a book or something.
Like, hey, can I get that cash back? Because I had no idea. I'm just coming. So I'd be like, hey, remember that $75? I'm going to need that back.
Well, what I did was as I had you a book or whatever just to give to you, and then I went and bought a gift card because it wasn't as much as your $75. It's like, well, I didn't add to this, this guy. No, but the deal is, I think I'm going to say that I wish our listeners knew, like, I don't make money off of Amazon sales. Like, I've received, Johnny, I'm going to confess.
Yeah.
I've written 24 books. I've received one real royalty check. Now, advance checks are different. They pay you in advance. Royalties are after it's paid back the advance and it's selling well enough and you get like this small, I'm talking like less than 3% kind of thing
on the book. Yeah.
And it's 3% of the profit. Mm-hmm. So like it's not 3% of the retail. So it's whatever. So if they sold it to Costco, they might have sold to Costco. It's $15 retail. They sold it to Costco for $6.
Do you want to put a donate link up, John? Is that what you're trying to do?
My whole point is like, you gotta sell a lot of books to get. I got one royalty check in the history of my career, and you know what's hilarious about that? It was a mistake.
Oh, really?
I don't even know how it happened to this day. The publisher sent me a check. No, they just somehow messed up in their numbers. Sent me a check, and it was very kind. I called my agent. He was like, "Yeah, this is not right. I know the numbers in that book." And the publisher's like, "Oops." It's crazy. They sent me a check. They're like, "Well, we'll just apply it to any future royalties." It's like, "God, joke's on y'all. I've never got a royalty check." So anyway. My point is, if I promote on Amazon, because I can't put all that into a video and be like, hey, look, y'all can go buy my book and I won't make any money off of it. Like, that just sounds, it's just too much. So,
Give it away. And that's the best thing. You know,
Give it away now.
What you got to give it to your mama. What you got to give it to your papa. It's a whole thing. It's a family thing.
You do a little dance and you drink a little water. Anyway.
Anthony Kiedis knew what was up. He knew.
Oh my goodness!
For such a time as this. No, that's great, man. And it's like I said, it's a timely book, John.
I just feel weird. I don't want to hawk something right now. I just don't want to be like, look, I know your life's falling apart. Well, but here, buy this book.
Well, there's no way to not make it feel like you wrote it just for this. like you put it together the last week.
Yeah. Well, it came out last year. You know, it's like. But you don't want to say it's too old.
Yeah.
Because then people are like, well, I don't want to.
That's about the time this virus probably came out, too, though, if we're honest. Mm.
Guys, I'm telling you, have you ever seen me and the coronavirus in the same place at the same time?
Uh-huh.
I submit you have not. So I don't.
Did you see the thing where this person named their twins Corona and COVID?
I did see this.
That can't be real, right?
I think it is. I'm deeply offended.
What are we doing as a culture?
It's a weird. Yeah. You do feel like that people should have some, screening process before they get to name a child. Like, look, I get it. You can have a child, but before you get to name them, there should be some sort of, you should go through TSA pre-check.
Give me three names and we're going to choose the name. Give me three names that you would choose and we are going to choose for you.
And if three of them are so hideous, you're going to ruin someone's life, then we're going to help. We're going to serve you well.
Based on something that you like, you're a fan of or whatever. You're like, you don't get to name your child Dwight Schrute Smith. Like you don't get to do that. We're not going to allow it.
Nope.
As a hospital, we have credibility in the community and we refuse that name.
Yeah.
But
by the way, did you see Tanya Harding? Speaking of names, did you see Tanya Harding the other day on the General Insurance commercial?
No.
Dude, you should. I mean, like, it's just like she's the spoke.
No, she's like, not.
She is
the spokesman for the General now.
I don't think it's the General. What's the other one? National Insurance. It's one of the lower.
One of the. You're barely legal by having this insurance. Yeah,
you need liability insurance, and she's like walking through an office. It's really not well done, and it's kind of like she's kind of making fun of the fact that she committed a major criminal act and you never know how life's going to go. And sometimes you make mistakes.
Sometimes somebody takes a pipe to your knee.
And I was just like, man, here's the deal. I don't judge. Like I'm totally can't imagine her trying to get work to feed her family. You know, I mean,
yeah, she's probably paid, she's probably paid her price at this point.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to come back from, you know, and I don't want all of my mistakes from my youth to be hanging over my head.
You hit with pipes in the knee.
Right. I mean, dude, let's be honest. If you counted all of those
rival youth pastors that you were like, hey, go get him.
If I had a dime for every, by the way, we saw that the day, y'all used to try to make, we can't say his name, a rival youth pastor for me. If you remember this or not.
Oh, yeah.
So when I had Ignition 7, there was another guy and some of our kids would go to his youth group and stuff and he'd make videos and you guys would always call it Ignition 8.
Ignition
you know,
8.
Just one better. And so I saw his name the other day and I was like, Ignition 8. Like I said, you know, my wife was like, I think John's having a mental break. She didn't know what it meant, but I've thought about that. The rivalries are real in ministry if you let them be, Johnny. They are.
Yeah, and that's true comedy too. I mean, I was talking to somebody last night and they said that they were like, I was talking about how I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do for the next couple of months. And they were like, well, I just assumed that you were doing great. And I was like, well, actually, no. You know, they were like, I guess you just always think that somebody else that's in comedy or whatever in the same field as you are like, oh, they're probably sitting pretty though. They probably got savings. They probably they're all set. And it was like, well, actually, no, it's complicated, but no, I'm floating along like everybody else. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do. But you always kind of picture in your mind that somebody else has it together a little more than you they're not going through as hard or, you know, they have a more peace or more confidence than you, et cetera, whatever. Never true.
Sometimes you talk to people and they do. And you're like, oh, wow.
But those are the ones that never would throw it in your face, though. Those are the ones that just like have a way about themselves. And you're just like, I want to be like that guy. But it's usually like they're humble about it. It's not a, you know, they throw, because if they throw it in your face all the time, how much better they are, then there's something else going on usually behind the scenes, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
They got to bring it up.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that it is a wise thing. To whatever it is, to you really begin to evaluate your assumptions. Like most of us don't even think through, evaluate your especially comparison based assumptions.
Yeah.
Like, what do you really think about those around you, whether it's another mom that you see on Facebook or whether it's another dad, you know, or another working person in your industry, you know,
right.
Another minister? Like, those whole, like, the comparisons are so deeply embedded, I think, in the way culture works because of television, social media. I think it's already human nature. I don't think it's always been there. I'm always reminded of that story in the Bible that gets me of at the end when Jesus had, before he ascended, he just had been raised from the dead, and he's talking to Peter and John, and he's having that whole "Do you love me, Peter?" conversation by, you know, over the fish breakfast there at the lakeside. And it's, you know, that's a great amazing, you know, dialogue between them. And he tells Peter basically how he's going to die someday, you know, like, hey, some days you're going to stretch out your hands and someone's going to take you a place you don't want to go, meaning like, and John, even the narrator, says, you know, he is telling Peter that you're going to end basically with a martyr's death. You know, he's foretelling that.
Yeah.
And Peter like takes it upon himself to go, well, what about John? You know, how is he going to die? Basically, like, he immediately just heard he was going to die. Yeah. And his first thought is, I wonder what's going to happen to that guy, you know, like compared to what's going to happen to me. And so Jesus says, well, what is it to you if I let him live forever and not die, you know? And you do what I've told you to do, but I'm paraphrasing this, Johnny. I'm not quoting it directly.
It's Matthew's translation.
And of course, the narrator, who is John, says, and so a lot of people have claimed that Jesus was saying, I would never die. It's not at all what he said. And so he's clearing it up, you know, kind of towards the end of his life, that was not the promise. The whole point of the conversation was, we just default to whatever's happening to us, to look around at the people who are comparatively in our sphere, whether it's, again, through parenting or through financial things, through, you know, whatever it is, and to just try to figure out how our situation compares to theirs. And it is to me, I don't know how it is for you. It's a daily battle. I think in my recovery and I think in my process, it's a little easier, but I certainly still have, I told my group, my regen small group the other night, like there's still some wounds in me, you know, related to my comparison to others, especially in ministry, because I still can't sometimes not see some quantifiable elements as God's stamp of approval.
Yeah.
I feel God's stamp of approval on a lot of areas of my life, you know, just in my, when I'm with him, when I'm talking with him, I see God do blessings or bring blessings in ways that I can't deny. Mm-hmm. I've seen him save family members' lives, and there's some family members have died. I mean, like, it's not like he owes me that, but I see those gifts when they come and I understand what that is. And then there are certain areas of my life that I still, it's so comparison based. Like, yeah, I'm still not though successful there. And the way I know that is by looking at others in my generation or in my time who are successful there. And so that comparison thing is, I mean, it's hard. It's a hard thing to get out of and to think differently about.
Well, and it's even happening now, you know, now that people are, the people who had a more stable, like they already had online services, they already had it kind of together. Now the churches who maybe didn't have all the gear and all the savvy, the tech savvy stuff, they're feeling less than right now in this season, yeah. Probably, you know?
Oh yeah.
But honestly, I feel like the services is probably the least important thing the churches could be doing right now. There's so many people who are alone, they're panicked. I feel like all that follow-up and looking after people who are insecure, food insecure and yeah. income insecure. I mean, I feel like that's what the church is doing that's important right now. And the service is like this thing that we have to keep going because we want to feel like we're gathering together still. We're still keeping that momentum going. But I feel like if that's your main focus is like, let's talk about this all day, every day. How are we going to look good on Sunday still?
Yeah,
that's a little bit missing the mark to me.
No, I had an exact talk with some of our staff this morning of like, and that's been the good thing about, you know, we have failed at so many things over the years. In the last several years, it's become apparent to us what being the church, at least the pathway to try to pursue being the church better. It doesn't mean we do it right or we get it right, mm-hmm. but a lot of our, and we still do a lot of programming and those things, but shifting our energies away from events. And I don't mean events, putting on events is great. I mean, like, look, our central energy should be put on being and making disciples. And so, yes, you'll spend your whole life defining those two things. Like that's enough work right there. How, mm-hmm. you know, that's how we're going to be evaluated, or how we're going to evaluate ourselves is no longer by, again, this is where I get out of the quantification mindset and the comparison. We are going to evaluate how the services go. We are going to evaluate how we spoke, how we sang, how we did all those things. We're going to evaluate our true effectiveness as ministers and as a church leadership team by how well or not well we were being and making disciples. And that has, you got to be very careful about the evaluation, because we're not talking about, you know, judgmentalism, and we're not talking about legalism. We're talking about, hey, you know, what can we look at? And if you asked every Christian that question, the hard part is they all answer it differently.
Yeah.
You know, one thinks going to church is being and making a disciple well. One thinks posting on Facebook is making disciples. One thinks that, you know, being political is making disciples, you know, or being faithful to their political opinion or whatever. We got a lot of watchdogism, you know, like it's my job to you know, sniff out the global conspiracy before right. anyone else.
I'm the gatekeeper, right. I'm protecting the true gospel from the people who have it wrong.
Right. And so like we just simplified and started realizing for us, look, that's okay. Everyone gets to think whatever they want to think, and that's not our job. To those who commit to one another within this body, we're going to all try to figure out what we think the best biblical definition is. And it's a constant moving. It's really not that much of a moving target. It's us that's moving towards the target. Like, okay, this is actually a lot simpler when you look at the authenticity, you know, when you look at the honesty. You confess your sins to God for forgiveness, but you confess one to another for healing. James 5:16, you know, the healing in life comes from a life of confession to one another in a safe place, getting over the fear of that. Just breaking into it. That, again, like I said, that's a lot of energy that I could redirect to doing what I did for a lot of my life. And that is today I could be writing the most theologically deep post that makes sure everyone out there, like you said, stays on track somewhere and pointing out, because I see all kinds of things happening that are scary to me or theologically unaligned to me, just and I want to address them. And maybe there's a time to. Here's what I do know, though. I haven't yet done a very good job of being and making disciples. Yeah. So until I do, like, I think the day may come that I'm doing a better job of that, but I'm going to try to focus my energy and our staff energy less on the service point more on just being that and let God take care of the rest.
I did see a pastor friend of mine who posted, he's a speaker and pastor, and he posted a thing that I thought was so funny. He said, I noticed all the prophets are pretty quiet right now that said 2020 is going to be your year. Like all the people who are like posting all this, like, it's going to be about profitability. It's going to be about success. And like, they're all like, look, we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. Like nobody's saying anything like that now.
I'm such a I told you so kind of guy. That's a big part too of my problem, Johnny.
Yeah.
Look, it's not because I want to be right or anything like that. Yeah. I just want people, whenever you did that, if you've been living your Christian life, just, I'm sorry, I'm going to just say this. I'm reading all kinds of conspiracy theories from Christians right now about things. And you know what? Things could, they could be right. They very well could be. Here's what I do know. They're not, they don't have a lot of probably reliable sources.
Yeah.
And there's going to be no way for them to know. You're just not, I'm sorry, you're just not in the White House, or you don't work for World Health Organization. You don't, like,
who?
World Health Organization.
Who now?
Oh, nice. I got you.
Sorry.
Johnny. Yeah, I told you.
It's like a Abbott and Costello.
It was, yeah.
Who's on first? John.
That's good. That's
I'm
good.
Sorry. Listen. World Health. We apologize.
It's so,
actually, it's whom? It's okay.
That's great. I need you to send this to the who. Actually, it's to whom. It's that's great.
To whom?
Yeah. But what I want to do is I want to say, look, maybe you're right, but mm-hmm. if this has been your pattern for like the last 5 years, like you just always are freaking out about something, I want you to be responsible to have to go back to every time you cried wolf
on
all those other things and at least call out the fact, like go be as bold about your attractions as you are about the things you're putting out mm-hmm. and just go and say, hey, you know what? Back when I said, and go
they
into
can always
it.
Say, but they can always say like, because I called them out, it didn't happen.
or it happened and they covered it up, you know, whoever they may be.
That's the thing about conspiracies is you always have that back door of, you know, you can retreat to that position of like, well, look, I mean, of course that's what they're going to say. You know?
Right. Right. But it's like when you said we're all going to be dead or Jesus is going to come back in 3 years and it's been 7 years. Like, yeah. I want you to go, you know what?
I forgot to carry the four.
Whatever it may be. Like, you know,
well, that just, happened when we were kids. Remember the book that said 88 Reasons Why Jesus Returned in 1988? You would have been how old?
I was old enough to be in school and it was three cloudy days and they said it was going to happen and I was terrified because I thought the clouds were gathering.
So there was a book called 88 Reasons Why Jesus Will Return in 1988. It was by, I think the guy's name was Ed Wisenant, I think was the name of the guy who wrote this book. I can't believe I remember the guy's name, but we knew that book. I don't know if we believed it or not, but everybody was kind of like, well, I mean, look, and then I remember the funniest thing about it, which is so funny now that you're an author, because this is just shows the marketing mindset. Do you remember what he did when he didn't come back?
He wrote in 89.
He wrote a book about he missed it by 1 year. He acted like he didn't carry the one or something. It was just so funny to me. And people bought that book too. Like some people did. Yeah. They were like, okay, it's 89 now. So
he probably parlayed. Well, number one, the dude had to be a bestseller out of the gate, and then he probably parlayed that into another huge advance. And he's probably lived off that money the rest of his life, no problem. I mean, it's crazy. It's just for me, it's some principle. Like, guys, it's cool. Maybe you're right. If you've been wrong a bunch of times, maybe you're not. Like, you know, like there's some humility to it to go. It's okay to say I'm not right about everything. I mean, that's the life of confession. It's the life of saying, oh, I could have made better. I could have been a better disciple. I didn't get all that right. I was too works-based. You know, I was too event-driven. I was too comparison-based. Like, I mean, I don't know. And there'd be 100 other things that comes up with those, with that journey for me. But
Ed Wisenant. Ed Wisenant was a former NASA engineer, did not know this about him, and a Bible student who predicted the rapture would occur in 1988, somewhere between September 11th and September. He's predicted September 11th, bro.
Wow.
That's kind of weird. I never realized that. I knew it was September, but it was about Rosh Hashanah. It was to fall on the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah. That's what he thought. So it was going to be on that.
Wasn't it like the 50th of 50-year jubilees or whatever?
Yeah, sort of cycle.
And I do believe that.
Go ahead. He wrote that and he wrote a book called On Borrowed Time. And then he wrote the 89 Reasons Why. Wow. 88 Reasons Why He Will and One Reason Why I Was Wrong by 1 year. Come on out. Man.
I'm trying to think of who did I hear the other day where they said it was some very, very famous theologian was asked, you know, well, tell me your thoughts on the book of Revelation. And the guy said, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, it was awesome. It was like,
yeah, man, we need more of that. Like,
can we just say, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like it's important. It's God's word and there's things for us to glean from it. And I don't have a conclusion for you of what all it means. Like what a, I think helpful.
Yeah. I have a lot of people in my life that I've never heard them say, I don't know. They, when you say something, they immediately act like they knew, or they have a strong opinion about what the other person is doing wrong or what they would do if they were in that situation. But that there's people in my life that just, I've never heard them say the words, I don't know.
Yeah.
And you just, and it's, those are the least pleasant people to be around. if you're honest, it's just, that's not a, they think they're being reassuring, but it's so arrogant.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, I think the older I get, the more I'm like, I'm an, I don't know guy a lot.
Yeah. You know, and again, you remember those fireside chats I used to do with the kids?
Of course. You and President Kennedy.
Yeah. Me, I tell you, actually that was FDR.
Oh, was it? I thought Kennedy did a fireside chat.
He might. FDR started fireside chats.
So you're saying Kennedy ripped it off. God, you have a lot of accusations on the mind today.
Well, I used to do a thing with the kids where they would have questions and I would just take a whole night.
But there was no fire.
Well, that was the idea. I'd put a fire on the screen. It was a, you know, it was like FDR. A fake fire. And they would ask all kinds of stuff about, you know, suicide or about depression or about end times or about purity. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of, a lot of the questions I tried to set in my mind, and it scares me now to think I did that long ago, but I, you know, there's knowledge. And what I used to say is this, hey, if they ask a real hard one, I go, let me just start. First answer, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like I wanted to be faithful to say that. Secondly, though, let me give you three or four scriptures and ideas of what I've read other people who might think about it, their opposing viewpoints, you know, one thinks this, one thinks that, and it's okay to not know. Like, I think living in mystery, like the idea they're not supposed to live in some sort of mystery, like mystery from God, his unsearchable ways. I'm thinking of all the scriptures. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. His ways are higher than our ways. As high as the heavens are above the earth. It's not like a small high away from us. It's like a great distance. Mm-hmm. God is that, he's so far ahead of what you're thinking. And yet he's revealed through Jesus, the Bible says, and through the gospel, this plan hidden from the beginning of time, meaning everybody up to the point of Christ, they weren't let in on the plan. Like it was hidden. It was even hidden from the disciples. This is Easter week, you know, it was hidden from the disciples. I read the other day where Jesus told them, I'm going to go into Jerusalem. I'm going to be beaten. I'm going to be crucified. And 3 days later, I'm going to rise from the dead. Yeah. Like he just straight up tells them, and they all, and the Bible says they said to each other, but they could not understand what it was he was saying. But they literally, he just, one time he didn't speak in parables to them. They were like, I don't get it. You know, and he was just telling them straight. They thought it was a parable. They thought it was something metaphorical. Mm-hmm. And it was like literal. And even when it happened, they still didn't remember it until later because it was hidden from them. And so you start thinking like, look, the stuff we do know, God has gone to great lengths to help us have a revelation or a revealing what it is. And it's a lot. And it's like you spend your life, you know, growing and learning in those things. It's going to spend your life learning to be courageous enough to share with other believers and spend your life learning not to hide, spend your life dealing with those things. And so, and then, but instead of that, we go and still try to like dive into all the stuff that's still hidden.
Right.
And he says that other things are hidden too, that I'm not going to let you know till the end. So it's just I'm not opposed to it. It's just, you know, Paul says this, you spend all of your time in endless disputes and genealogies that have no answer, these circular arguments, you know, these circular places. And I feel like that's just so much of our Christian world because it distracts us from having to really deal with the fact that am I today like truly growing as a disciple of Jesus? Am I loving others in a way that Christ loves me? Like I'm not saying those are the only two things that we ever do, but scripture is clear. Until you're doing those two things, they should be your chief energy at least. And then maybe you can delve into some other mysteries.
Plus we've been given the answers. You saw Left Behind with Kirk Cameron. Like it's right there out there for you.
We've already been told.
Watch those movies.
It's pre-trib.
Right. There's a workbook that goes along with it probably. I guarantee you there were workbooks.
A group discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kirk Cameron. Boy.
Somebody was saying Kirk Cameron can't go live. I can't remember who posed as a comedian friend. Kirk Cameron can't go live in this time because he smashed his computer in that movie, Fireproof. Remember he smashed his computer? And so he's got no computer to... That's so dumb. If you're listening, Kirk, we love you. I guess. I don't know. Sure. I like growing.
We do. Yeah, I like growing pains. Kirk's a good dude.
Yeah.
I say he's a really good dude. I mean, I don't know him personally. But
I don't either. He did Potty Break with Tim Hawkins one time. Really? So, yeah, because Tim was in one of his movies. He wrote a part. He wrote a part for Tim in one of his movies. Wow. And his play, like his goofy brother. I think he was a brother in the movie, and Tim played a wow. goofy. Tim took acting classes and everything. So
wow,
it was a movie called Mercy Rule. I think it was about baseball, like Little League. Maybe it was like Church League baseball. I can't remember. Baseball, yeah. You know, it's an allegory, yeah. John.
Oh,
much like okay. some people think Revelation is.
Well,
this one really was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know you believe there actually will be locust people and seven-headed dragons.
And here's what I know.
Maybe there's one outside. Don't open your doors, guys. There's a
dragon. I don't know. Here's what I do know. I do think that the Bible is written in, they're not, someone, I read this in the book of the day. I can tell you what the Bible is not. It's not the New York Times. It's right. not like this just in. Like, you know, especially you're dealing with ancient texts and different cultures and like some, they had different purposes. Some was poetry.
Poetic prose and yeah.
And they're all, I believe, inspired by God and fruitful for life. It's not to discard them, but to have some sort of context to realize that, and I love that this is what I've been telling our church lady. Church lately, not our church lady. I've been telling this church lady all the time.
You've been telling the church lady. That's an old character that you've been talking to. Wow.
Yeah. You know, we tell our church, like, hey, everything in scripture, it may not be prescriptive. Some of it is descriptive. Yeah. It's a different time for a different person, and it's valuable to your life. It'd be good for you to know, though,
right.
that what God told the Israelites to do as they're journeying through the wilderness for 40 years and how to keep their tent clean is not a situation you live in, and yeah. you're not under Jewish law. You know, so like you have to realize it may not be all prescriptive because you saw it. So
right, and some people read it. It's used. God catches all your tears in a jar. I've kept all your tears. I mean, do we really believe that that's, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Right. What is it?
It's obviously right. poetic. Yeah, you're looking for the meaning, the deeper meaning of it, is that he cares about your sorrow. Right. right.
Yeah, he's aware of it. Doesn't forget about it. You get to
heaven, the first thing you ask, hey, where's the big jar of tears? Like, that's not necessarily your first question.
Give me some scuba gear and go to the bottom of that sea of forgetfulness where I can find all the stuff that you put down there on the ocean floor
right.
with Audio Adrenaline song. You know that Audio Adrenaline ocean floor, the song of the 1990s, Christian-wise, was voted the song of the decade. You know that apparently, I don't know if this is just folklore, but again, if it is, it's very obscure for folklore. The only people who listen to old Christian music would know, but that they didn't want that song on the record, the producers.
I love stories like that.
They're like, oh, that was not a keeper.
Oh, it's so great. I love stuff like that where you had to fight for something to get on. And then, I mean, this isn't in the Christian music world, but like when they were making Wayne's World, Mike Myers became kind of famous in Hollywood circles for being difficult to work with. And one of the reasons is he had different ideas for gags in the movie. And they would come along, a studio exec would come along and be like, no, we want to use this song. One of them was the car ride scene where they played Bohemian Rhapsody, right?
Yeah.
He had that idea in his mind since when he was playing street hockey with his friends. And he had certain songs that were just so funny in the way that they changed dynamics. And he thought it'd be so funny for them to headbang to that song. And they came in, they wanted to put the newest Guns N' Roses song because Guns N' Roses just released a new record. They were like, we've got a deal with this record label. We want to put a Guns. And he goes like, no, it's not funny. They go, yeah, but you're just headbanging. That's the whole point, is you're headbanging. He goes, no, we're headbanging to a song that's not a headbanging song. And we're getting like emotional in the emotional parts together. That's why it's funny. And these guys couldn't get it. And he goes, that was me. That was his hill to die. And he's like, I will quit. And he fought. Wow. And he was so beyond right. Yeah. That song and all of Queen's catalog charted again after that movie, some umpteen years later. You were seeing those songs back in the charts because of that movie. And the other song that he chose, which is one of the funniest songs ever, is a song that the band, the Asian girl sings, Tia Carrere plays. They sing Ballroom Blitz. And it's such a funny song too. If you ever hear that song, that's a crazy funny song, but he just knew and he fought for those ideas. And so, but I love stuff like that of like, this almost didn't make the record, or it would have been a totally different movie if we had not done this one thing and we barely did it. You know, after we tried three other things, we did this. And I love stuff like that.
Don't you fancy yourself when you do something that doesn't go over well? Like, you know what? They just don't. That's a weird line. I don't know. I don't trust myself enough to have hills to die on. Like, I need committees, you know,
I'm
around me.
I'm afraid to make the wrong decision. To be sure of myself is very scary because it's like I'm the editor and the author and whatever of my show. But it's a, that's a great place freedom wise, but it's also terrifying because you're like, if this fails, I have no one to blame but myself, you know, with stand up. It's not, there are no committees unless you put people around you that you can trust and say like, but even then, if they're not really comedians, you can't take everything they say at face value. Cause like, even when you start out, there are people who, and this is probably true of preachers too, cause you have people who mentor you, you know, when you're starting to learn the Bible and you're starting to learn to preach, and you can learn a lot from them. But if you do nothing but do everything they say to do, you'll just be a carbon copy of that person.
Right.
You have to eventually find your own voice.
Yeah.
And comedy is definitely true that way. If you find somebody that's like a mentor and they go, you go, hey, what would you fix about that joke? Well, if you just let them give you all their advice, your act is going to look like them. So you have to eventually like branch out and fail. You have to fail.
I always feel, you know, I always tell Andrew when we're in a series together, like, you know what, if you're worried about saying it like I said it last week, or if I'm worried about saying it like you said it last week, the odds are we're different enough that we could both say it as close as we could try to the other one, and it won't say anything the same. So I think when you're diverse in a relationship, you can feel free to cover the same topics. You know, if you have someone and you're collaborating on something in life, and they're already like you or have a similar delivery or similar thought process, then I could certainly see it. But I think for, you know, for a lot, well, of course, we're dealing with a prose type thing differently. We're talking for 45 minutes instead of for 45 seconds, you know, so.
This is one of those things too, where we started, we didn't know what it was going to be. And now people are listening and we're so grateful, but it's very long form. And whereas what I do on stage is very get to the point, the least amount of words. This is way more verbose. And I'm just kind of, we're just spitballing and just speaking from the heart. And people like seem to like that too, which is cool. We got new, we have new patrons over the past.
We actually gained several new patrons, and we're so grateful to you guys for that.
So cool. I want to say this because I have a friend who is a patron now, and he didn't do it to be a sponsor, but I want to plug him anyway because he's such a cool guy, and he makes these cigar box lamps. He repurposes old cigar boxes and some other items. I think he does globes too, but he makes these lamps and he donates the proceeds to missions work.
Oh, wow.
It's called Foothills Collective. So Google Foothills Collective, if you're listening, and go to his Etsy shop. And I mean, I'm telling you, I've bought so many of his lamps for Christmas presents, and every one I've ever gotten for somebody, they say it's the coolest thing they've ever gotten. I got one for Tim for his bus, Tim Hawkins. He's like, it's my favorite thing on the bus. Cause it's like you put the Edison bulb, it's just a very warm glow. It's not like the overbearing light. So it's the perfect like chill out lamp. And anyway, he makes all these things and he donates the proceeds. And he's a pastor himself at a church in Ohio. And his name's Larry. He's awesome. So I want to say thanks to Larry. But go to Foothills Collective, find something from him, buy something for your family. It's a great way to support him, support missions, and support us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Make sure when you put those Edison bulbs in there that you have the right size bulb, or you may explode the lamp and almost burn your house
down. Like Edison did the first 400 times, probably. You're like Edison in a lot of ways, John.
I am. You know what? I'm just like Edison minus the smarts
and all the stealing from Tesla.
Right. we start our own conspiracy.
Oh, man. We impugn Edison from beyond the grave. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry about that. If you drive an Edison today. Hey, we are grateful for all of you who did, you know, who become sponsors on Patreon. And if you're thinking about that, you can go. And we do know you guys have your own needs right now and all the stuff going on. So I do just encourage you, if you can, man, find and be. We're launching community groups, Joni, right now. It's crazy. And they've never met in person. It's like they're meeting. And so
like a blind
it's
kind of
like... Yeah. And so, you know, Laura and I were long distance for a long time, and you can actually build some really strong communication skills over this season. So I encourage you not to
isolate. The other person is hot. Is that what you're saying, John? You can really make long distance work if the other person is hot enough. And that's the kind of thing that we're injecting into community.
Right. Into community. The deal was, we didn't have Zoom back then. We had cell phones that there was no unlimited plan. We actually were calling from landlines and sending emails. Man.
Remember those cards where you'd have to punch in them for a certain amount of minutes and.
Oh, yeah. Remember on the road how you guys would always steal my phone and run the minutes up till my parents cut it off?
My favorite was finding the friend who didn't have a text plan, because before people texted, and every text cost 10 cents. So I would send my friend Brent texts all the time that just said 10 cents. It's the most hateful thing that you can ever do. Would just say 10 cents.
That's great.
He'd be like, stop it, dude. I go, 20 cents.
He can't block you.
No.
No. Next, it might be something important later. So,
we would never block you, dear listener.
Oh, my goodness.
And find us and share us and leave a comment. If you leave a comment on your review, that helps other people find us because the algorithm pushes the ones that have reviews. So we've said that before, but I don't know if you guys know that. But if you leave an actual physical review, it helps other people to find the show because it gets a bigger push from the algorithm.
Yeah, and a lot of people listened in the month of March. It was one of our highest months ever. So
turns out people being trapped in their home is the secret to our success. So right. Once again, you're back. Enriching yourself. You got the book. Now you got the podcast. You're an evil genius, dude.
I'm telling you, I'm right now rolling around in piles of money or toilet paper because I traded it all. So. Hey, guys, we do appreciate you listening, though, and we'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
Feeling stressed? Let's take better care of you. I'm Bonnie Gray, the host of Breathe, the Stressless Podcast. Subscribe at lifeaudio.com.